Hello, everyone. This is the Made in Nature podcast, a podcast dedicated to exploring humanity's deep connection to nature, a connection that is important to understand so as to provide humanity with the correct perspective to make the right decisions as technology becomes a greater force in our lives with the potential to radically change us and the natural world. My name is Carl Moore, and my guest today is the distinguished Professor Olli Johansson, a leading authority in the field of EM, electromagnetic radiation, and its health effects. Professor Johansson recently retired from the renowned Karolinska Institute in Sweden, where he was associate professor in the Department of Neuroscience and head of the Experimental Dermatology Unit. He has an impressive track record in the neurosciences and has published more than 600 articles, reviews, book chapters, and conference reports in the fields of basic and applied neuroscience, dermatoscience, epidemiology, and biophysiology. He has participated in more than 300 congresses, symposia, meetings as an invited speaker, and an additional 200 as an invited observer. He has also been a guest professor as well as adjunct professor at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. Although retired, he's still very active in continuing his work with ongoing international scientific collaborations, stretching from Japan, Belgium, Australia to India and the USA. His studies have been widely recognized in public media and as a regular interview guest in magazines, newspapers, radio, and TV, both nationally and internationally, as well as on the internet. His research group continues to investigate adverse health effects of modern man-made artificial electromagnetic fields, as well as the functional impairment of hyper-electrosensitivity, a state-recognized sensitivity to EMFs that affects between 230,000 to 290,000 Swedish men and women. This research includes the insidious health effects of electromagnetic fields on the general population, such as memory, concentration, and learning difficulties, neurological damage, cancer, immune system impairments, fertility issues, as well as impacts on other animals, plants, and bacteria. Today, we'll be talking about the state of existing communication technologies from 1G through 4G and Wi-Fi to the current fast rollout of 5G, and what impact this may have not only on humanity, but the natural environment and the planetary biosphere. Professor Johansson, welcome to the Made in Nature podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored to be part of today's program, and I look forward to our discussion.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored to have you here. Professor, you have an extremely impressive track record that most scientists would be envious of. However, I sense from you that all these accomplishments are only secondary to your real passion, which is to help humanity and the planet. I'm curious to know some more personal background as to what the young Olli was like. And at what point did you see that you were going to dedicate your life to such an honorable contribution to humanity?
Well, I've never had that question before, but I like it a lot, actually, because it goes back really to my mother and father, and particularly my grandmother and grandfather and other relatives on my mother's side. And they always showed an impressive respect for all living creatures. Even a weed or some bug that you didn't want to have in your garden, for instance, they still were very respectful against it. And also they learned by their trade that, for instance, chemical methods, they were not the choice for them. I would say the word respect very early was injected into my soul. And then later on, as you say, I took it with me throughout the years in high school and when I entered the medical school at the Karolinska Institute. And of course, in the medical sciences, respect ought to be the cornerstone, really. But unfortunately, as you know, some of my peers, both in the clinical field as well as in the scientific field, they do lack respect for patients and relatives and others. They may be brilliant doctors, but that's not always enough. And I would maybe swap around what you said. You put mankind first and then the planet. Maybe I would put planet first, and Mankind Lost, because honestly, I'm not that impressed by Mankind. And as you know, when you look around, you never see giraffes with machine guns.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes, I should be aware of that myself, putting the planet first, because one of the things I try to say is that we're only as good as our environment in terms of health. So that we've evolved in this natural environment, and so we're a part of it. And this idea that we're separate is an illusion. So one of my things is to show the natural world that we're a part of it, not separate. And that we deal with all these subtle interconnecting vibrations, communicating with our bodies, with the environment, and then to contrast that against what we're doing with artificial frequencies. And then it becomes obvious that it can have an effect, and not a good effect, or an effect that will change us. And so that's kind of my position, is this connection to nature. So yes, I should put the planet and the biosphere first. So at what point you went to medical school, and dermatology, was your thing just to study the skin? And at what point did it become an electromagnetic issue?
Well, actually, you know, I worked only really in the neurosciences, studying the brain, spinal cord, and the peripheral nervous system. And when I had my dissertation presented, it is customary at the Karolinska Institute to change the field of interest to not further compete with your previous supervisor. And I looked around and realized that one way to change it would to swap from mice and rats to a rather unusual experimental animal, namely human beings. And by doing so, I got restricted. It's difficult, you know, to ask someone to hand over half of their heart or half of their brain, but a piece of the skin, a piece of the oral mucosa, and for women, a piece of the vaginal mucosa you could get. And therefore, we started off to study particularly skin and skin diseases. And then one evening, I did something I actually never do. I listened to radio, and it was kind of a mistake because someone had left the radio on in the laboratory, and I was about to turn it off when I heard a lady down in Göteborg on the Swedish West Coast working in the trade union office asking for help in neurology. And I'm not a clinical neurologist, but a neuroscientist. So I thought that was close enough. And she was talking about skin rashes and skin irritations in people that had been starting to use the newly introduced personal computers. And now we are at the beginning of the 1980s. So I called her and said, wow, I know a little bit about human skin. Maybe I could help you. And that is really the reason why we talk today, because that started a completely new line of research, and which has brought me around the world many, many circles and to all types of situations, including lectures and conferences and symposia. And I've also met people that the scientists rarely would meet, I would say, and been in rooms and situations that most scientists never are invited to. So it has been a very honorable journey, and just to meet you and talk to you, I wouldn't have done that as a classical neuroscientist. So it has been a very nice and good learning curve, but at the same time, also in the beginning, you know, when we started to be interested, we actually got quite a lot of money to do research for. But then, unfortunately, we started to see things and report things that didn't fit the general agenda, and the doors, you know, quickly closed in front of us. And after a few years, it was just impossible to get any funding to this particular area, in spite of it being, I would say, central and crucial. And I mean, that was at the time of the 1G and 2G. And now we are already up on 5G, and discussions are ongoing for 6G, etc. So the development technically around the world is very, very fast right now. And at the same time, we are definitely not picking up on the medical and biological side effects. And that's scary in itself. And when I'm interviewed, I often point to that maybe it's not the human being as such that is the primary target. It could be something else, like the pollinators, like honeybees. It could be plants. It could be bacteria that is harmed and even wiped out in such a manner. So the existence of mankind will be jeopardized in its inner core, I would call it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, even at that early stage, the doors started to close.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
And also the frequencies were lower, so they would resonate with larger sized objects. But as we go to the higher frequencies, we start to be targeting things like with the 5G, we're going into millimeter wavelengths. So we start to affect things at the millimeter scale. So that's kind of frightening. But as regards, this kind of brings up the other, well, there's a whole bunch of questions come to mind, but it's the funding issue, because I know that you were fighting for years to maintain your position at the Karolinska Institute, and that was only threatened because of lack of funding.
Yes.
Even though your work is highly needed. I mean, with nearly 300,000 electrosensitive people in Sweden alone. And the very fact that you address that, the fact that the electrosensitivity, hypersensitivity is a real thing, gives, even that in itself, gives peace of mind to all those people in the world suffering. And yet you had to fight to try to maintain that. Over those years, and then how did that make you feel? How did you deal with it?
Well, I mean, of course, as a scientist, you get very frustrated because you believe in the necessity to investigate these kind of questions. And as you pointed out, in Sweden, only with 10 million people living here, we have nearly 300,000 electro-hypersensitive persons worldwide. It has been calculated, and I only mentioned the lower figure now, that it is in the order of 350 million people, making, for instance, the corona crisis pretty small. And therefore, I feel it's a real necessity to continue the work. But to be frank and honest, I would say that today, you know, the difficulties have grown, and it's very, very hard to get the necessary funding. Every small step costs so much effort, we are kind of looking for either like a mass funding or crowdfunding, where every person would send like $1 or £1 a year, which would create a huge amount of money. Or if there are people with a lot of money that could dig deep into their pockets and support it with the money we need. And when we mention the sums, people, I remember, for instance, one guy from Siemens Electronics, when he heard what we needed, he said that Siemens Electronics in Germany, they spend more on their Christmas coffee for the personnel than what we needed for our research. So he said, "I'm ashamed that we cannot support you better than we do, you know." So I'm kind of sitting here, the years are passing by, I'm getting more and more frustrated. At the same time, I try as hard as I can to at least participate, as you say, in podcasts, television interviews, conferences, answering people's questions on email, sending out information, writing commentaries and articles. Actually, we right now have an article about electrohypersensitivity together with Japanese colleagues, so we hope it will get published. But there are sort of minuscule steps instead of taking the giant leaps for mankind.
Would you, because there's a lot of conspiracy theory, certainly around the 5G and its rollout. Would you see the lack of funding some sort of conspiratorial thing, or would you just see it as being blind greed and ignorance? What's your feeling?
I don't think there are any real conspiracies, because when I look around on my experience from research, it is always driven by greed rather than need, meaning that if you jeopardize the growth of the society and the monetary side, the finance side, then you are seen as some kind of a threat, I will call it. And people are more protecting paper notes, paper bills, than real real people and real animals and real plants and bacteria. Mankind is just too greedy and too stupid, you know, I don't know. So something like that. I don't see any real conspiracies, but maybe there are. And, you know, science history is actually filled with conspiracies. So maybe yes.
Yeah, right. But it's it doesn't. Well, in your profession, you need to focus on the effects and not get involved in figuring out the who and the why, but actually what's happening and address that. And I agree with that. That's a positive side to take. Because for me, I would reading on it. It became quite dark and scary, and that's one of the reasons I backed out of it. But nevertheless, we're seeing this. When I saw the Starlink satellites go up back in January, 60 satellites like a pearl of strings stretching across the evening sky, I thought to myself, well, there's the alien invaders taking up their offensive positions. I said to my friends jokingly, and then I said, well, actually, that would be a really good strategy. But you can make up the science fiction stuff. And but the other thing is,
I love reading science fiction, and I always love doing it. And as you say, this is a possibility. And but at the same time, I still believe that all the satellites and so on, they are there only for greed. It's nothing more than that. And that in itself is serious enough.
Yes.
Because, you know, in English, you often say that the curiosity killed the cat. And that's maybe true, but definitely stupidity will kill mankind. I'm just hoping that people actually know what they're doing, but obviously they are not. And you have probably read about this American Senator Richard Blumenthal, who February the 7th last year asked the Federal Communication Commission, the Food and Drug Administration in the United States, and the operators for all the evidence showing that 5G had been investigated and proven safe. And they had to admit that they were not aware of a single, even paper, trying to investigate this. And he concluded that it looked as mankind was flying blindfolded. And that's a very good picture. We are doing things where we don't know at all the end point. And from a philosophical point of view, that means that we will jeopardize life on this planet. And the question is just, will we do it tomorrow or in 100 years' time?
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, I mean, you do point to some things which surprises me, because if we leave the radiation / health issues, I'm surprised that people so willingly give up their personal integrity, their privacy, and allow themselves to be 24/7 scrutinized, where they are, what they do, what they buy, etc. That's not the society I like. And now we are not talking about radiation or health at all, just other issues. And also the massive investments into military technology, and people don't protest. There are single persons, and also the massive destruction of the environment. And apart from you and Greta Thunberg and a few more, most people don't give a toss about it, you know.
Yeah, there's not only the health effects, but it's the whole societal behavior. And so you can extrapolate that if you have this electromagnetic grid, which is, the artificial information grid, that there will become a, that, that that everything will be watched, everything will be seen. And, you know, I say to people, like, my grandmother was able to recite Shakespeare, but nowadays lots of people can't even remember their own phone number.
Exactly.
Because we were becoming lazy, and we have other abilities that are starting to atrophy, and we have generations, and this generation doesn't even know of these capabilities we have.
And you know, like here in Sweden, the transport authority being responsible for driving licenses recently issued a warning to parents because young kids and teenagers, due to their intensive usage of cell phones, tablets, laptops, have become so nearsighted or myopic, so they will never, ever be allowed to even try for a driving license. Minor setback for some, but, you know, just think about it. If you want to have a driving license because you have to, you are running a small company where you have a delivery truck, or you want to be a bus driver or a train driver or something, and no, you cannot, because you cannot even find your way through a maze, you know. And therefore, I'm surprised that, again, people are not more considerate about all these side effects branching out like the arms on a sea star. And again, we are not even touching upon the health effects. But what I do, I mean, we started talking about frustration. And as you hear, I am frustrated, you know. But what I try to do, wherever I go in the world, since no one knows who I am, I always lean forward to people who has a cell phone or a smartphone in their hand. And then I ask them the following: do you know that the World Health Organization in Geneva, in Switzerland, have cancer classified the radiation types that is coming from a cell phone? And basically no one knows about that. But from that moment on, I have put a small seed into their brain, and hopefully they will continue thinking about it, talking about it, maybe entering a discussion into their families and workplaces. And that's the kind of things I can do. And just recently I had such an example with a very posh lady sitting in one of the Stockholm commuter trains. I did the same trick with her, and she got really upset and angry with me and yelled at me and said that I could go to hell and I should mind my own business and I didn't know what I was talking about and so on. And I held up my hands and said, please, 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 wait, wait. You know, you have one of these smartphones. Couldn't you please Google WHO brain tumors and mobile phone radiation? And actually she did, and went silent for like 3 minutes. And then she slowly looked up at me and said, oh, I'm very, very sorry I yelled at you. It's all here, she said. But now I get angry again, but not with you, but with our government, parliament, and health authorities. Why haven't they informed me? You know, I'm a mother and a grandmother, she said. And I recently gave my 12-year-old granddaughter a new cell phone, and now I regret it. So the information flow is not even a trickle, I would call it, here in Sweden, in contrast to other countries like Italy, where the Supreme Court last year ordered their parliament to inform every Italian about health effects of artificial electromagnetic fields, and they did it, and they did it beautifully well. So there's different takes on this, and you may say that, well, it looks as if at least the Italian Supreme Court and Parliament are more concerned about Italians than the corresponding bodies are concerned about Swedes, and maybe about people in Ireland, United States, and so on. So there is a huge difference in information, and I hope, of course, that you and I are completely wrong. I beg to God every evening, you know, please make me wrong. But at the same time, you know, I see the thousands and thousands and thousands of scientific peer review based publications, and then all of them need to be wrong at the same time. And that has never happened before in the history of science. But hopefully we are wrong.
Yeah, the way I see it is excuse me, is that we're electromagnetic beings. I mean, everything is dictated by electromagnetic fields. Even our olfactory mechanism is based on electromagnetics. Even the way a ligand joins up to a receptor in a cell, it's electromagnetic. So, and then you know in science to Newton's law, to every reaction there's an opposite and equal reaction. Something must happen. If you put an artificial field that we can pick up, it's going to have an effect, without a doubt. But the problem becomes in the debate is what is safe. And this is where you have the margin of play, because everybody's different. They have a different background, different physiology, different history. And so therefore, we have these ridiculous standards, ICNIRP, the International Non-Ionizing Radiation
Protection.
Yeah. Which is what, a million times greater than some of the groups of scientists like the Bioinitiative report suggest, where biological responses seem to occur. And yet this, we still have this old standard grandfathered in, which only is for short-term exposure for 6 to 10 minutes. And it has nothing to do with 24/7 low background radiation. And, you know, just as I'm saying that, I'm thinking I drove down the country, right across the country there a week or two ago, and I don't think I had any insects hit my windscreen on my car. So what I'm saying there is there seems to be an effect. And we may not see this, it may not be obvious, but it seems to be happening everywhere. There's a big change going on.
I agree. We might not be able to see it, but at the same time, if you just stick to the insect issue, was it last year or the year before, from Germany, it was reported that more than 75% of the pollinators are just gone. And they don't know why, but when scientists do make controlled experiments, for instance, honeybees, they don't like the presence of a cell phone. They will move away from the beehive and not return. So there are both scientific studies as well as observations in reality. And I remember already in 1998, that's a long time ago, you know, I was at a meeting in Göteborg on the West Coast, and all the big shots in this field were there. And for several days, they presented very interesting data. And at the end of the conference, I asked the physicist who had given his pieces of evidence. I said, okay, now we have listened to all these fantastic scientists. And if we take all their knowledge together and produce another precautionary type of safety measure and make it into a practical mood, namely, how far away on the table should I put my cell phone using earphones to get away from the source of radiation? And he said, well, you know, it's hard to exactly answer that, but I would say a safe distance for a single cell phone would be 5 to 10 kilometers away. And, you know, the audience just went blank and everyone started thinking and then realized, yeah, he's actually right. And that also says that if you put it away, you need to live in a completely radiation-free society. Because otherwise you are irradiated. I mean, you don't even need to own a cell phone or a laptop or whatever. You are still irradiated 24/7 and at levels that are hard to even understand. You know, the ICNIRP levels, they may be like a million times above by initiative report suggestions, but they definitely are 10 up to the power 18 above the natural background, into which people like myself and you, we were born. And now we have 10 up to the power 18. That's the one with 18 zeros more radiation. And I ask people, you know, just imagine that this morning, the outdoor temperature have risen 10 times, 10 up to the power of 18 times, then not only your house would melt and yourself, but the entire planet would melt immediately.
You can see.
I mean, it's just colossal readings we're talking about. And when I give lectures, I'm sort of searching for good descriptive words. Should I say colossal increases, astronomical increases, biblical increases? But neither one of them really covers the extent of exposure. And it's invisible, and therefore people imagine it's not there actually, but it is. Because, you know, I always quarrel and say no one is listening, but that's not true. Some organizations and commercial companies and some, they have listened very carefully. For instance, the insurance industry, which for more than 20 years ago bailed out, they do not in any way, not a single company around the planet, take any form of responsibility for health effects of artificial electromagnetic fields, all categories. And that's more telling than any test tube or mouse I could show you. They have made up their mind, and they did it a long, long time ago. And I remember a particular meeting in London in 2002, where, for instance, representatives of Lloyd's UK were there, Swiss Rea, which is the largest reinsurance company in the world, and a small company from Sweden called If Scandia. And they all said that for them, the question was not whether all this radiation was dangerous or not. They knew it was dangerous. The only question was, who is going to pay for all the demands for health compensation in the future? And they didn't want to be part of that process.
Yes.
So they said bye-bye to the whole journey, you know, and bailed out.
It's incredible. I have a question here. You were talking about, everybody thinks that when you're exposed to electromagnetic radiation that you may feel pain or your health goes down. But there's also the other side that it could be like people are getting a buzz off this extra energy near their body. And I'm thinking when power lines were an issue, the run from city to city back in the 70s, they found that the cattle in the fields were congregating underneath these power lines because it was higher magnetic field was releasing endogenous opiates. So the cows were getting high off the electromagnetic field.
Yeah.
So it's not all bad. So this brings up my question as regards frequencies and the fact that that paper came out by Tahiri et al. In 2017, showing that the relationship between EMFs and bacteria. So I was thinking that we had in Ireland and hospitals around the world, the MRSA bug. And I'm wondering if the Wi-Fi frequencies in the hospital were causing them to grow more prolifically. And I know there's a lot of questions, but I want to get this one in as well, is that back in the 1980s, there was a lot of candida problems. And candida is, the growth is promoted when placed in an environment of 8 to 10, around 10 megahertz. And that was the CPU speed at the time. So I wonder if you could comment on frequencies and the proliferation of bacteria and that it's antibiotic resistant as well.
Yeah, and you know, to go back to the cows under the power lines and the release of endogenous opioid ligands, that may sound nice. They're getting high, as you said, but of course, from a biomedical and biological point of view, it is abnormal.
Yes.
That is not something that should happen. You shouldn't have cows high on that kind of electromagnetic fields. They should be high on milk and nothing else. Then for the bacteria, it's a very interesting question you put up, and actually it's a series of questions. And yes, scientists have seen proliferation of, meaning an increase in number of bacteria, and they are growing. And it's not surprising when you feed them with energy, they pick up the energy and start dividing and proliferating. But the scary part is, as you say, Tahiri and co-workers in 2017, as well as other scientific groups that have done similar studies showing that when they exposed normal bacteria that you and I have on us and in us right now while we talk, when they were exposed either from the second generation, the GSM mobile telephony, or from modern Wi-Fi routers, nothing really happened apart from the fact that they became antibiotic resistant. And completely independently of this result, 2017, without knowing about each other, the G20 countries had a separate meeting only about the fact that every year, more than 25,000 Europeans die prematurely because of antibiotic resistance in healthcare. And it was speculated that by 2050, more than 10 million people each year would die all over the world from the same antibiotic resistance. But if you merge Tahiri and the G20 country discussions, these 10 million people could easily become 7.6 billion people. Because if we don't have antibiotics that will help us any longer, people will again start to die from a splinter in their thumb, as we did at the end of the 1900th century. And I immediately called a relative who is an orthopedic surgeon, and she said that this is a huge problem behind the curtains. We are not allowed to talk about it in public, but now and then news do slip out into media and you see headlines about antibiotic resistance in healthcare. But she says it's far more serious than that. And people are hoping actively that someone will come up with a new antibiotic compound, because if not, then we are facing problems, you know, and again, making the current corona crisis look like lukewarm soup, I would call it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite frightening when you look at it, when you start to look a little deeper into any aspect of this. But while I have you here today, Professor, just to the way technology has evolved, I try to tell people that 5G is not necessarily an upgrade from 4G, but actually quite a different animal altogether.
Correct.
And I was surprised to learn only a month or so ago, and I should know this, but perhaps I was in denial and I didn't want to know anything, but the new antenna for 5G, they're beamforming, which means it can direct to your cell phone like a laser beam. So wherever you are, you get, there's no attenuation in the signal, you get good reception. So what would happen is, like I said earlier, if one were to try to do surveys or try to measure this, depending on where the cell phone is and where the antenna is and how long people are talking, you would have these kind of almost like microwave beams going back and forth all over the place. So it's a variable environment with an intensity that is much the same along the beam. But then again, because I went to the States and worked during the Star Wars period, and that was really to develop electromagnetic weaponry. So this is a fallout. This technology has a lot of research that was originated for military applications. So once again, I'm harboring on something quite nightmarish, because if one wanted to, let's for example, get rid of somebody with the 5G phone, or when they address that person, the tower just puts up more power. And, you know, that scenario. But there's also, I heard, things like 6G and 7G. Do you have any idea? Would you like to comment on these 5, 6, and 7G things?
Well, I mean, I think we both know equally much or equally little. And don't forget, again, Richard Blumenthal as an example of a person, a senator, asking the commercial side questions and also the authorities, and finding out that no one knows anything. People are just interested in rolling out, making a profit, investing and doing more things. And along that line, developing further systems like 6G, 7G, etc. So it's an ongoing process without any background knowledge about the biological or medical side effects at all. But if we go back and look at the literature for 4G, 3G, 2G and other systems and power lines and Wi-Fi and so on, we realize that this is really taking a huge risk. And that's the reason why, for instance, the insurance and reinsurance companies have bailed out. And also, don't forget that all the manufacturers of telecom technique and operators, they have really protected themselves from any legal claims in the future. And that's odd, because they sell all these gadgets to the general population as safe, but they don't believe in that statement themselves, you know. So this is just crazy from that point of view. And from kind of a science philosophy angle, you might discuss that somewhere along the line, we will, in Sweden, we will say, pull the carpet beneath your feet, you know, and you will just destroy the basis for life on this planet. And when we have done published controlled experiments using, for instance, plants or ants or human beings, as you say, the results, they are disturbing, they are scary, they are shocking. And we want people to listen. And recently we wrote to the Swedish Prime Minister. He didn't even respond. He sent our letter to another minister. She didn't respond. She sent it to a civil servant, and she didn't know a thing. She did respond after 100 days, and the response could be summarized in the English words, blah, blah, blah. It was just nothing. And then you realize that mommy and daddy, they're not paying attention. The government, the parliament, and authorities, they don't give a toss about this, you know. And as I said before, please, God, make me, you, and others completely wrong. Because if we are right, then we may already have stepped over a boundary. And, you know, for instance, in the environmental questions about global warming and similar, people nowadays say, and not only Greta Thunberg from Sweden, but also others say that the point of return, we have passed it. Now it's only about damage control. And to me, you know, I feel the hairs on my head are standing up, you know. What damage control? Oh, that's late. Then we are soon reaching what the European Union has summarized in a report, late lessons from early warnings. And I have coined the expression, too late lessons from early warnings. And wow, I'm more frustrated. And without the necessary funding, but with the obvious experiments, which you have touched upon already in your program here, and we have to sit, you know, it's like having your hands tied behind your back. We cannot do anything. We can just watch and see. And it is stressful.
I find it, you know, when I try to alert people to this with facts and data, from whatever way this is being managed perceptually, it's considered conspiracy theory. And yeah. And this is ridiculous, because, I mean, there's people who really exaggerate the problem. Well, the problem is pretty big. I don't know if you could really exaggerate any more than it is. But people come up with some outlandish ideas, and that's thrown in the mix with real information, and the whole thing is tossed out in the bin then. So nobody wants to address this.
But at the same time, I always tell people, only stick to facts. You don't need to spice it up with any wild speculations, because the facts, they are more than scary. And therefore, for instance, when we wrote the letter to our prime minister here and didn't receive any useful response at all, we wrote an article because we think it's very important that the whole planet should be able to read our letter in Swedish, translated also by a professional translated to English, and the response letter from the government in Swedish and English, so they could see for themselves what is going on locally in Sweden. But you know, it's practically the same all over the planet, with, for instance, Italy being an exception and a few other places. But mostly people only want to have more, faster, bigger, better, and more money. And of course, money is useful. You can use it in various ways to spice up your own country and the infrastructure and the healthcare and whatnot. You need to also look into reality. And I'm just afraid that we are currently looking away from reality.
Well, this desire to ignore things. I remember Tom Wheeler, head of the FCC, a few years ago, he was getting so excited about the rollout of 5G, and he says we're going to have no health studies or anything like this. And this is why there's no evidence of health problems associated with it. So, and so that is one way of eliminating any remarks against this technology. So,
and as you remember, Tom Wheeler himself came from the telecom industry. So I think you say in English, you are putting the fox to guard the hen house. And of course, he would then ban all attempts to investigate health effects and only put forward the technology as such, making the telecom providers richer and richer and richer. And that could be good for a country, of course, but looking away from any potential biological or health effect. And it could mean a very big bill down the road.
Yeah, very big. I have a question as regards, and this is probably a selfish one. How do we protect ourselves? I was writing this down and said, because, you know, I know about shielding, and I think that there's a lot of there's active shielding where they put out waves that are meant to counteract. They have little stickers and crystals and things. And I've never gone that way as a solution. Because it's hard to have any facts regarding that. But the best way is to shield your premises. And I know that Y-Shields in Germany does the black conductive paint, I think is great and stuff like that. And it also, I think, does some protection for 5G. However, I see this is leading us into living in little boxes that are Faraday cages that will even be more cut off from nature and from the frequencies, the lower frequencies of the globe that we need for health. So that's not an answer either. But the question then is what about the animals and the insects? It's almost like a catch-22. And the fact that this isn't discussed more, it's very easy to call it conspiracy. Because it allows all these theories to proliferate.
Yeah. No, I agree to 100% with you, when it comes to protection, the only ways from a biophysical point of view doing it is either by shielding and or distance to combine these two. All the things you mentioned, like stickers, pyramids, crystals, pendulums, and so on, they do not work at all. It's just a complete scam or snake oil. But there are products out there, for instance, from Poland. It has recently been launched a low specific absorption rate phone. That could be the beginning of something different. They have protective shields which you put between yourself and your laptop, making the lower parts of your body protected. And also there is a Swedish company called RP of Sweden, standing for Radiation Protection of Sweden. If you Google rpofsweden.com, and they sell very smart, I would say, cases for cell phones, tablets. They do it for Wi-Fi routers, baby alarms, and so on. And the reduction in radiation to your body is in the order of between 70 to 99%, depending on brand and model. Some even takes away 99.9% of the radiation without impairing the battery lifetime or their connectivity. And they are very cheap. They are in the order of 30, 40 pounds, something like that. So you can easily buy it and use it for a dramatic reduction. And it should be pointed out that for this Polish company called Modita and their low SAR phone called Modita Pure, as well as for these cases from the Swedish company, neither of these commercial companies have done their tests themselves, only independent test facilities. For the Swedish company in Finland by Verkotan, who is one of the world leaders when it comes to testing and verifying shielding and radiation. So you can really trust the numbers, the figures that has been put out, in contrast to the pyramids and stickers where you don't have any testing whatsoever, of course. So these gadgets, they do work. So that could be a recommendation to at least start at that end. And, you know, the last, I would say, 5 years, the word solution coming from lecture audiences is becoming more and more common. More and more people are asking for solutions. And as I say, there are a few coming up, and maybe around the corner, we will see even more such inventions being launched onto the market.
Fantastic. I realize the time has flown by, and we've only touched the surface.
Yeah, we will deep dive the next time.
Yes, we'll take it to the next level next time. And yeah, we'll take another shovel load of this stuff and
move it on. Put on our mental scuba gear.
Yeah,
and go diving.
Yeah, we're going deeper.
Yeah,
fantastic. So, is there any is there anything you'd like to add? You know,
well, only one thing I would say, you know, that to your audience being curious about this, it's important that they kind of educate themselves and not blindly trust you or me, but do their own homework, because I think it's very important that people make up their own mind. Do I want to have this or not? Or do I want to change something? And we talked about like shielding, but also, of course, actively engaging, listening more to other programs, reading more, reading scientific studies, and also contacting your local as well as national politicians, civil servants, authorities. And my recommendation is to only ask questions that can only be answered either with a yes, a no, or the sentence, no, I don't know, or with a figure slash number. And one obvious question could be to a parliament and a government, can you guarantee that this is 100% safe for me and my family? Yes or no? And as you saw there in the United States with the Senator Richard Blumenthal, they couldn't. They didn't have a clue about safety.
And it's incredible. That's good advice. To keep their feet against the against the fire. Because they have to be answerable, and it's just not sufficient to say we don't know. Well, why don't you? We need to know. Something is going on here. There's plenty of evidence.
So, and you know, again, as you said before, the facts that are already there, they are more than scary.
Yeah.
It's like a synopsis for a really good Hollywood movie, I would say.
Yeah.
Or a really bad Hollywood movie, maybe you should call it, you know, because you will leave the movie theater being quite rattled and shaken.
Yes, yes. I know what that's like myself. When you go into this, it can be quite dark. So, you know, we take it one step at a time. And I think the thing is to educate people, let them educate themselves. There's, what I find interesting is nowadays, if one just goes a little bit deeper, there's loads of information. In the past, yeah, there was a lack of information. Now, there's almost too much information. And all one needs to do is decide to have a closer look. And yeah, I think a lot of things, their eyes will be opened. They might shake a little bit in fear, but little by little. And I think spreading the word, like planting a seed, that's all it takes. You don't need to lecture somebody and scare the crap out of them. Just say something, a solid fact, and let that ruminate in their head, and that'll spread as a seed. So,
yeah, I agree.
Professor, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Thank you very much.
It's fantastic seeing you and listening to you, and I hope to have you back again.
I hope so too.
Thank you so much. And so, with that, I will say goodbye to you, and I'll just wrap this up here. If you hold on one moment, just to say, this is Carl Moore. You've been listening to the Made in Nature podcast, which may be found in many platforms, from Anchor, Spotify, Apple, iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to our newsletter and check out the website, which should be coming up soon. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Professor. We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.